3, 2, 1.
When liftoff.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.
Okay, we checked all four systems, and there you go on modulation, all four, and keying with a go.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I dag i Erik Knuts, eller romkapselen som vi nå har omdøpt det sånn.
Det heter romkapselen.
Det ble litt klamt for deg der.
Jeg synes det, ja. For mye press, ja.
Som den årvåkne lytter kanskje har hørt allerede, litt annen lyd i dag. Det fordi at vi har gått, vi har en EVA egentlig.
Romkapselen ute på tur.
Ja, på, i veldig fornemme omgivelser, ja. Grand Hotel og greier.
Grand Hotel, og omgivelsen matcher jo gjesten da.
Ja, vi har akkurat tatt over rommet etter det jeg antar liksom Stortingets romkomité eller et eller annet sånt nå, for vår tidligere venn Kårstein Eidem Løvås gikk ut døra her,
ja.
Og igjen sitter altså den mest celebre gjesten vi noen gang har hatt æren av å...
Storfint besøk!
Det får vi si, det får vi si. Du skal få æren, Erik.
Yeah, today, and the rest of the podcast will be in English, because our guest today is none other than the Director General of the European Space Agency. Jan Werner, hello.
Hello, good morning.
And we can call you Jan.
Please, please do
that's,
so.
That's great. So, yeah, first, why are you here today? Why are you in Norway today? Because we were tipped off about you last week.
There are, of course, several reasons. The first and most important one is I love Norway.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. So the second one is there is today the space dinner. And I also had the opportunity already this morning to meet some parliamentarians to talk about space and that the money invested in space is good invested money. So so there are several reasons. It's more or less, it's space.
It's space. And I think the space dinner is more or less one of the most important events in the Norwegian space calendar.
Which obviously is not only a dinner. It starts at noon.
Right,
so it's more lunch.
This is even in the morning. Yeah. So again, first... A little bit about you. We usually ask our guests why did they end up in space. So I checked out your CV on
strange.
On ESA's website, which is ESA.int.
Yes.
For those who want to check, and I, among many other things, you're an engineer by education.
Civil engineer.
Civil engineer, and it says that you spent 1 year in Japan investigating earthquake safety of nuclear power plants, which
exactly.
Made me think, where did you go? To the space business from
okay.
There. How did you end up in space?
You have to go back in history a little bit more. I was born in 1954, but in 1957 Sputnik was launched.
That's true.
And my father took the small Jan on his arms and said, "Look, Jan, there is Sputnik," and showed with his finger into space. I could not see it, but if your father tells you there's Sputnik, you see it immediately.
Oh, this is so great. I'm born in 64, so for me it's Apollo 11. I think there's
okay.
A whole generation of people with Sputnik and
so I'm Sputnik and Apollo 11 and Apollo 10 and Apollo 9 and Apollo 8. So down to Apollo 1, but not only Apollo, but also I followed all the Russian activities or Soviet activities at that time to go to the moon. So Lunokhod, etc. So I was really starting from this 1957, maybe not exactly that date, to follow all space activities. But I never dreamt about becoming a part of the space sector. So I started as a civil engineer.
Did you never dream about going to space?
Yes, but this was a dream so far away from any reality so that I could not imagine that I have any link to that. So I started, okay, I said maybe I become a priest or I become a teacher or I become a doctor, medical doctor, but I then decided civil engineer.
Yeah, but you had your stakes were quite high. You had ambitions, the doctor or priest.
Yes,
or
right.
Quite wide.
I think this is... one of the secrets of space, and I'm always trying to convey that message. Space is really putting fascination in the brains of people, even though those people who have nothing to do with space, they are fascinated that it's possible to send humans to the surface of the moon, or to go to Mercury, or to the comet Churyumov-Gerasimenko. So all of these space missions are fascinating. Mm. Fascination is a positive move in our brain. This is already something better than all the other news we hear. So if you have a positive move in your head, this is where I'm happy. That the next thing is to come from fascination to inspiration, to understand that somebody had a dream and realized the dream, and this is inspiring you. Now, if you go the next step, not all are doing that, but then you are motivated and say, okay, several people had a nice dream. They realized it with a nice space mission. I am not a space guy, but I have some dreams and I want to realize this dream. So therefore, space can do a lot for society, for people dreaming and realizing their dreams. And I was dreaming at a certain point in time to become a civil engineer and create bridges, skyscrapers, tunnels, maybe also save power plants. So therefore, it was part of my dream, inspired and fascinated by space.
I think that's so true. I mean, I was myself inspired by space to become an astronomer, and I have many friends who never became astronomers or space scientists, but they went into space and science and engineering.
Exactly.
Being inspired by space missions, yes. and not just the manned missions, but for instance, the Viking missions in 1976, landing on Mars, huge. Yeah. The Voyager missions.
Pioneer
was so important. But anyway, you're also here as the Director General of ESA.
Right.
That's the right way to pronounce it, right? ESA in English?
I like to say ESA.
Yes. And let's face it, the point of reference for many of our listeners is, of course, NASA.
What is that?
Right. So let's just to Norway is a member of ESA, and I guess most people know that. But what is ESA compared to NASA, just to put it in perspective?
It's really a totally different organization.
It is.
The similarity is space.
Yeah.
But that's all. Yeah. So we have, ESA has 22 member states, 19 out of which are at the same time a member of the European Union, but we have three not being part of the European Union, Norway, Switzerland,
and
how's that going now
UK.
With the UK? Yeah, are they still a member of ESA or are they just resigning from everything?
We are an intergovernmental organization, independent and intergovernmental, and UK even decided before the referendum of Brexit, Boris Johnson announced, and we will stay in ESA. So this is so that's the first difference. Yeah. We have 22 member states. NASA has only one. The second one is all our programs are directly steered and controlled and decided by all these member states. So it's that the member states are ESA, and not only we are an organization far away from the member states. Mm. And then we have a special rule, but again, NASA does not have, is if a member state pays a certain amount of money for a certain program, let's say 10% for a mission to Mars, then this country is eligible to get back into their country 10% of the contracts we are putting on the table. So therefore, we call that G-return. And this is attractive for the member state. So therefore, we have a different organization. And also different is the way the director general is decided. In the U.S., the president is saying it, and then there is some voting. I'm elected in a democratic voting by all 22 member states. So this is, again, a different situation. And then a further differentiation is we are covering all the different activities of space except military, but because we say exclusively peaceful purposes, but Earth observation, navigation, telecommunication, science, exploration, safety and security, launchers, technologies, operations. So we are covering all the things, and this is also a little bit different to NASA.
But with 22 member states, I mean, NASA has to deal with the Congress and the president, which can
with
be...
With one president.
Oh, yeah. And that can be difficult enough, but... How is it with 22? Is it difficult to govern such
as... It's like a big family. And it's very nice. Of course, also sometimes in family, mother and father and children have different opinions about what is the best thing to do the next day. But I really can say this is a big family. Yeah. We have 22 member states. One country, one vote is also an important message. So independent of the size of contribution, one country, one vote, which is a very important democratic setup. Mm. Of course, sometimes we have longer discussions than only with one. But in many cases, this is a beauty because one country would say, no, we don't like to have a relation with that or that country. But then if 21 other countries are saying, that's not a bad idea, so we really can work together globally. So it's the beauty of ESA is also this diversity of member states. I can tell you, a Norwegian and South Greek person are thinking differently. Mm. The same, also different Estonia, let's say, here, and Portugal on the other side. And to have all of these different people in ESA and as a member state of ESA, this is for me really a beautiful challenge.
And how does, I thought what you said about the inspiration, it was so beautiful. How does that translate to the actual organization? Is the fascination and the drive still there, or is it just bureaucracy?
When I started to become Director General of ESA, for me it was very important not only to look to the administrative parts, because this is going, but to have a narrative for ESA, to have a beautiful narrative of what we are doing, to be able to really to tell people, to communicate that to people, normal people, not only the specialists, what is the beauty of space. And therefore, we really changed our way how to show what ESA is. In former days, we were just listing all the different programs. Right now, we have four pillars. One is science and exploration, one safety and security, one all the applications, and one enabling and support. And through these four pillars of what we are doing, we can better give an information to the general public what we are doing and attract also the non-space sector to work in space.
Do you have one thing? I know that there's a lot of talk about, in the US, for instance, is the notion of a space policy. Is there a common European space policy, or sort of a common vision, or is it sort of on a case-by-case basis where you agree to do something and then you move on to the next, or is there a sort of a longer-term vision?
According to the convention of ESA from 1975, there should be one, and this should be ESA. That is what is written in that convention. But today we have a different situation than 1975. We have worldwide more than 70 spacefaring nations. And of course, also in ESA, many of these member states have their national programs. Mm. And of course, they have their national space strategy, especially also here in Norway. So this is fine, as long as it is not in contradiction with what ESA is doing. But for instance, just look to what you are doing in Norway. You have now a space strategy under discussion, which is also talking about dual use. Mm-hmm. We have in France, they are talking about space command and so on. And ESA does not do that. So this is the question of a national activity. So we are doing exclusively peaceful purposes according to our convention. Therefore, we have not a policy like that, but we have a strategy for ESA what we should do.
Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Da du sikkert lei av å høre meg snakke om hvor enkelt det å levere skattemeldingen med fiken. Så vi gir oss her. Fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken. Superenkelt regnskap.
And what is the single most exciting thing that ESA is doing now?
Right now.
Right now.
You should not ask me that question. Because I'm
okay. What are some of the most interesting?
I tell you, I'm Director General,
okay,
not Director Special. Because if you ask a director, the director for Earth observation will mention, for instance, CO2 emission measurements or the ILO's wind speed measuring from space. If you ask the director for exploration, he would for sure say Mars sample return. The director for science might say Bepi Colombo, the mission to Mercury, and so on and so on. So for each and everyone, they should have their most fascinating mission, but I'm, as Director General, should cover all of them as a father of a kid and not say which kid is the one you love most.
Yeah. But are there, like, if you look at the whole humans going to space and exploring space since the early 60s, is there like a pioneering vision? Is there like this excitement and drive in ESA?
Personally, I have it, but I have to see that the European society does not follow this spirit 100%. So in Europe, we, especially also in my home country or my former home country, Germany, where they say always, what is the return of investment? €1 invested, how much does it get back? And we have to show that all the time. And we can show it, yes. But for me, as I said earlier, this societal impact of space is for me more important. And how to measure if the next generation is motivated for the future, how to measure that in euros or crowns? I'm not interested in that. I want to motivate the people. And therefore, pioneering is something which is motivating. But again, whenever we propose some missions, we are asked, what is the return of investment?
When you talk about, again, against, about ESA and NASA, comparing the scale, what the budgets? I googled it and I saw that.
We have billions of euro, and they have only billions of dollars.
But is it right that the sort of NASA has about three times more?
Our budget this year is the biggest of any at any time. It's 6.7 billion euros, and the NASA budget is something like 20 billion US dollars.
Yeah. So, but even so, even though despite the difference in size, I mean, it's not really a competition. I mean, you cooperate on so many. Yeah. I mean, isn't the main theme here that you have all kinds of partners? You are partners with NASA, you're partners with Roscosmos. So, for instance, we've had a previous podcast. We've talked a bit about the moon, about the Artemis program. I mean, one of the things that struck me is that I don't think many Norwegians know it, that if the US Boeing's Orion capsule is going to the moon, it depends on European technology, right?
The Orion capsule will go to the moon.
Yeah, the Orion. Yes. Yeah,
the Orion capsule. Yeah, it's not Boeing.
Sorry, but they're Orion capsule.
Yeah, the Orion capsule, yes. The Orion capsule will go to the moon, and it was European technology because the European service module, that is that part which was not working in Apollo 13, this part comes now from Europe. So the relation with NASA is, of course, cooperation at large. And cooperation is an enabler. Through this cooperation, we can do things we could not do alone. We would never have, right now, a European human transportation system. What with the European service module? We are part of human transportation. Without us, this new SLS and Orion would not fly. At the same time, we are competitors. And this is not bad. Yeah. To be competitors and cooperation partners does not exclude each other. So therefore, I'm really thinking competition is a driver who would run faster than 10 seconds for 100 meters. I will take a car anyhow. and the other way is...
Me too.
And cooperation is an enabler, doing things which you cannot do alone. And ESA is a model for that with our 22 member states. Some of them are in competition. Name it. France, Italy, Germany. They are in competition. In space activities, but at the same time, they cooperate in ESA because they can do things over there which they cannot do alone.
Mm-hmm. But so basically, to go back to the moon before
stop! Don't say that.
I won't. Okay.
No, to go back to the moon would be the total wrong message.
Okay.
Because what would mean to go back to the moon? That would mean we are doing the same thing as 50 years ago.
Right.
And we don't want to do that.
No.
We want to go forward to the moon.
Okay. So to go forward forward to the moon. So what many people don't know is that to do that, NASA actually needs international partners. They're not going to go forward to the moon alone. They're going to do it along with you.
I'm not so sure whether the president knows it.
Probably not.
And of course, they used to talk about 2028 as a target, and now it's 2024. And if you follow various NASA social media accounts, you now see different dates being delivered, depending on who's writing it. So, but anyway, how important is this moon program to ESA?
The moon for us in Europe has a different value than that for the US, and this may be the difference. You mentioned you asked me earlier because of pioneering. The Americans are happy to do a mission just because of pioneering reasons. Mm. They had the idea of going to an asteroid. You remember that was asteroid deflection redirection program. So they wanted to fly to an asteroid, bring it in the orbit of the moon, and then go there. This was mainly pioneering. In Europe, my experience is we can argue with pioneering, but it's much better to argue with contents. And if you go to the moon, forward to the moon, you have several aspects. You have, first of all, the geopolitical aspect, because I always say we should not do it alone. The Americans should not do it alone. It should be in a global, coordinated way. And I call this coordination multi-partner open concept, or simpler wording is Moon Village. So that's the same. But multi-partner open concept is the more sophisticated
moon
wording.
Village. Remember
moon
these village.
People. Yeah. The other thing is the moon is interesting because the moon is still, from a scientific point of view, very interesting. We found water on the surface of the moon. So can we use it for future technologies, for astronauts, for propulsion reasons? Then the far side of the moon, which is not the dark side of the moon, that's Pink Floyd. So the far side of the moon, there is the idea to build an observatory on the far side of the moon in order to have a better view of the universe. So there are a lot of aspects, and I would not exclude tourism from that. So who knows? Maybe somebody will go later on also for tourism to the moon.
I like your visionary thinking. I like it. Thank you.
I think it's not that visionary.
No, not,
visionary
not really.
Would be to go for tourism to Pluto. That would be visionary.
That would be quite visionary. I mean, there's nothing really, as we often talk about, there's nothing really technically stopping us anymore from, for instance, sending. It's a cost perspective and maybe a reusability perspective, but most of it is solvable with...
To go to the moon, yes, it is. To go to Mars, I would not harder. Accept
would it. You, yeah. Would you? Would you go? To the moon or to space?
I would go to space immediately. I would even stop this podcast immediately if somebody comes in and say it's now or never.
Yeah.
I think all of us would.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be so fighting out the door.
Concerning Mars, I would first of all ask about the situation, because to send humans to Mars means to send them for a journey of at least something like 2 years. Without any possibility to return in between. Mm. This sounds easy because people are saying, in the Arctic or in the Antarctica, people are also staying for a year or so. Mm. But this is different because you can go home in between if necessary. Apollo 13 happened and they just had to go around the moon and they were back after a few days. To go to Mars, if something happens, it takes 2 years.
Yeah,
and the other aspect is to colonize Mars or Moon, I think, is a stupid idea, because colonization for me means to stay there forever, for a lifetime or whatever. And the Earth is still the best planet we know. And to stay just in a can, if somebody likes to do that, he can do that at home. So shut the doors and stay at home for life. It's good not to have a communication with other people then.
But you want to see human exploration of Mars, right?
I will see. We will. I want. Yeah. I'm really convinced humans will always go beyond the borders. Mm. They went to the moon. They will go to Mars. Who knows, maybe even farther on into the solar system. But for exploration, for investigation, for science, even for tourism, as I said before, but not to stay there. I mean, for me, it's very dangerous. A very famous scientist, Stephen Hawking, said maybe we have to leave the Earth and find a better place. And this is, for me, a dangerous word, because it is an excuse to destroy our planet and say, okay, if we destroyed this planet, there is a planet B. Mm. And there is no planet B so far. Maybe far away, TRAPPIST, maybe one of that.
Star. Yeah, TRAPPIST is...
maybe a good location, but not within our solar system. And therefore, let's keep... With space technology, let's keep our Earth healthy.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. That's on the serious side, and we have to stay.
That was serious.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And we have to stay there a little while.
Please.
Because we have a situation in Norway that is, there is something we don't have, which we need. We had one guy a few years back who came close, Gaute. We had him on the podcast to become an astronaut many years
ago. Our near astronaut experience.
And what is the advantage of having an astronaut of a specific nationality?
It's cool.
Well, not only that, because I've talked to Christer Fuglesang, the Swedish astronaut, and I've also seen him in action in Sweden. And you talk about inspiration. I've seen how young Swedes gather around
him. And you think if I send you a nice European astronaut of whatever nationality, he will not be very cool to the youngs?
Yes, but there's something. But it's something about someone talking in your own language. And actually, perhaps in a small country like ours, I think that would be a big thing. I think that would be a sort of a return on investment that would be long term. It would take a bit of time, but I think that many more...
I understand, you're saying. But I'm a convinced European. I'm more or less... And therefore, when I see our core of European astronauts of different nationalities, all of them are for me like my kids. So this is for sure.
I think it's great that Luca Parmitano, yeah, he's up in the ISS as we talk now, which is great. But I think we have to admit that if there was a Norwegian there,
If you ask today a German who is up in ISS, he will not answer the question correctly. And it was the same when Alexander Gerst was there. You could ask the French or the Italian. So this is an issue for me. I'm trying also as to break that a little bit by bringing also the astronauts of different nationalities to schools and universities. Yeah. But you're right, and of course, a Norwegian astronaut would make a difference. Maybe a female Norwegian astronaut, she
very
would
good
make
idea.
A totally different. That means now with this podcast, maybe we can attract some people to apply for that.
And that's the next question is, who really decides?
Me.
You decide. Okay. So we have the right guy here. But doesn't it sort of, I'm guessing that, for instance, the Norwegian government has to be on board? Or
no.
You don't have to make sort of a contribution or pay extra money or join a program?
If you ask Jan Werner, no. If you ask people within ESA or the member states, they would say, of course, it cannot be that a country sends an astronaut in space which is not contributing to money. But I'm saying, my opinion, and I repeat it, it's not the country sending an astronaut. It is ESA sending a European astronaut with a driver license of this or that country into space.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are trying, we will open the question of new candidates again. Last time in 2009, we had 8,413 applicants.
Wow.
And all of them had already to justify their health status. So they had to do something before and had to pay something for a health check. And then out of that, my predecessor selected six after a long procedure, out of this and later a further one. So seven out of 8,413. And these are all very nice people. One female and six male, and therefore we will open it again, and I hope for a good female Norwegian application.
So do I.
Hører dere det, jenter?
Ja.
Det bare å følge med og søk når den knappen dukker opp på nettsida til ESA.
Ja.
That was a little inspirational speech to the Norwegian girls.
Yep.
Okay. To good. Apply for.
But I have to say, but of course we don't need just people saying, okay, I want to be an astronaut. There are some preconditions. So we normally at ESA we don't look for pilots only. Also, some of our astronauts are pilots, but we are looking especially for scientists having already a study behind them and some degree. So we need good people, but also well-educated people. So they have to have a strong character. And I tell always, maybe I would not be a good astronaut because an astronaut should have three different possibilities, three different roles. He or she should be a part of a team. Should be able to work together with others, should be able to follow others, and should be ready to lead others. Mm. So, and I would not all three at the same time. I could one of that, but not all three.
Okay, ja, her det litt å ta tak I.
Yeah. as you said, you talked about astronauts, thinking about the space station, because that's where ESA astronauts go to the space station right now.
But we are looking to the moon right now.
Looking to the moon, and that brings up another thought, which is when we go forward to the moon.
When we go forward
to the moon, what happens to the space station? Because can we do both at once? Do you have enough money or resources?
So the space station is an excellent laboratory.
It is
for doing microgravity research.
Yeah.
And it was also the excellent and best example for geopolitical aspects because we gathered Americans, Russians, Canadians, Japanese, and Europeans.
And now Kårstein, who was here in a meeting with you just an hour ago, he has nominated the ISS for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he can, because he's a member of parliament. And we think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Because as you were talking about that earlier, about the 22 countries working together for a sort of common vision. I mean, that's the sort of the peacemaking part of space. That's
So coming back to your question. So the space station is an excellent lab. For microgravity research and geopolitical aspects. So the geopolitical aspect we can also do with exploration to go to the moon, forward to the moon. But the question of microgravity research, this the best place to do that is low Earth orbit. And therefore, I think that we will use ESA, the ISS, also ESA will use the ISS for as long as possible. But at the same time, we are also looking into new developments in that field. So we got in our last ministerial conference, we got the full support for building a small space shuttle, we call it a space rider, which should bring microgravity research into space without astronauts, but so very efficient, reusable, and all of this.
This is on the planning stage now? How far?
No, it's more than planning. It will fly.
Okay.
It will fly. We got all the money. We are in We are in production.
Because yes. I was going to talk about. Because ESA used to have a space shuttle program called Hermes.
Yes.
And that's what cancelled.
That was cancelled, unfortunately. I was not director general at that time.
I thought that was a tragedy because in addition to it being a European program, it was actually better than the US space shuttle because it was placed on top of a rocket, not beside it. But anyway, this thing is that when is it supposed to fly?
I think it's supposed to fly in 2022.
Wow. Breaking news.
Yeah. This is, absolutely, because I thought I had done my research, but obviously not. Is this going to fly?
We had already a prototype, IXV, which flew some years ago. Something like 6 years ago, I think. And then we said, okay, what to do now? And we said, okay, now we will not do another experiment. We will build an operative space shuttle. That means this one should be used six times and then have even further successors.
That's of course the US has, but that's a secret. The X-37,
similar.
So it's similar to that one,
but
so
better.
And also it's civilian because the X-37B is very hush-hush. I mean, it's up there.
Exclusively peaceful purposes. Yeah. So we have some customers from industry, some customers from the pharmaceutical industry, from the material science. So this is really going forward.
Wow. One thing that hits me when you were talking is the juggling between ROI, exploration and the pioneering, and practicality and efficiency.
Yeah. But it's the same with you in your daily life. Huh? You have some dreams, and you then have to tackle with the ordinary problems to cross the street. So therefore, it's also for me. I have some visions, some ideas, some dreams. But of course, I have to make the member states happy because only happy member states are good member states. And therefore, I have to listen to them and follow what they are asking me and still try to put the dreams into what they want to do.
He said with a strange grin on his face.
Getting back to the reason why you're here, I see that you're supposed to give a talk here today.
Yes.
With the title "The European New Space Agency." Is that
right,
true?
Right.
Yeah. And when we think of new space, I thought usually we talk about sort of the commercial entities like SpaceX and other.
Say his name.
Elon Musk?
Yes,
thank you. Of course, he's often mentioned here. Well, he's very good at marketing. You have to give him that.
Yes.
Anyway,
but also by producing debris in space, we're sending a car in space.
Yes, that's true. Space junk, but it's very beautiful space junk. I have to give him that. Beautiful car. But anyways,
a Lotus. A Lotus. He called it a Tesla, but it was based on a Lotus.
I think we might get some comments here. But anyway, what's your thinking about behind the term new space? Is that sort of just government, or are you thinking also a more commercial space business in Europe? What are you thinking?
So I went to companies which are called new space.
Yeah.
Normally, new space, these are these companies producing in their backyard suddenly very excellent space parts. This is what is believed is new space.
Mm.
Young people, totally disruptive.
Startups.
Startups. I went to them and asked them, and interesting enough, none of them said new space is startups, new space is young people, new space is, and all of this. None of them. What they said is, new space is about cost reduction, about commercialization, about innovation, including disruptive innovation, artificial intelligence, etc., and about agility and flexibility. And if you use these four aspects, then there is no restriction to the organization.
Right.
So even an agency can be a new space agency. That's the idea. A big company, well established in thousands of years, can be new space if they follow this logic. But of course, also small companies can be new space. That's the message.
So if you look...
You're talking about layoffs in ESA or economization and efficiency. You're talking about cost reduction and
We are talking about cost reduction. We are talking about different roles of ESA in the future, not only being the typical R&D agency looking to the color of screws when building a spacecraft, that we are also sometimes we are a partner of industry in public-private partnership, or we are even a customer buying some goods from industry directly. For instance, we have a mission now to deorbit space debris. There we are a customer, not an agency in the traditional way. And therefore, I think to have different roles fits very well to the idea of new space.
I mean, we have a hypothesis, and we've actually made a show about it, that the last decade, the 2010s, was in many ways was perhaps the most interesting since the 1960s. So much interesting happened, so many interesting missions.
But 2020s are better.
That's my point. That's exactly my point, that the decade coming might actually be as exciting as the 1960s.
Better.
Yes. Oh, this is great. But yes. Because there are so many things happening now. It's you, it's NASA, it's the...
Good, in the 60s, all of us, I mean, not you, you are all too young, but I was there, we are always looking just to America and to Soviet Union. What are they doing? In the 2020s, we can look to the whole tiny
China,
world.
India,
Norway.
I mean, the Israelis landed or tried to land the probe.
No, they landed.
They actually landed.
A little bit hard landing,
and they spread some tardigrades on the moon. But anyway, and also New Zealand is a space power through a private company. So looking towards that, looking to all the new space nations and all the new space companies and also the new technology like reusable rockets.
And reusable spacecraft. Reusable spacecraft.
Right, with the Space Rider. How do you see ESA fitting in this very dynamic picture that's going to happen? So much is going to happen in the next decade.
You see me speechless.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the answer of this question is really traumatic. I was, when I entered into ESA, I was announcing Space 4.0. So some countries are calling Industry 4.0 the today's industry with Internet of Things and all of this.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, Space 1.0, that was and is still astronomy.
Yeah.
The first way how humans went into space. Space 2.0, that was the race in space of the 60s. Space 3.0 is where we were so far right now with some globalization, with the International Space Station, more activities here and there. But now we are entering into a new fascinating world, Space 4.0, where we have much more spacefaring nations, where we have a total new technologies available, like artificial intelligence, where we have also the Internet of Things in space, digitalization, but also very important participation. The programs of the 60s were decided only by the heads of America and Soviet Union. Today, space is decided by each and everyone. ESA takes regularly surveys of people from the street. We are asking people, we are talking with our member states, we are talking with industry. So space is really different. There is a shift of paradigm, and ESA, for me, has to move in this shift of paradigm very rapidly to become a new space agency. Therefore, this new space agency is for me also a request for the future. The
public opinion, how important is that in the whole picture?
Very important. We had a survey 2 years ago. We repeated one last year. And just to tell you the story of that, people from the street are really supportive for space. Mm. And then we ask them, okay, now you can say you are supportive, but how much money would you like to pay for space? And the result is for Europe, now unfortunately I don't have it in krona, but it's 287 euros per year per citizen.
Oh, wow. That's
287, that's nothing. It's a small amount of money, and they said they are ready to do so. ESA is asking for aid.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
So therefore, we have a big potential.
Yeah, that's and you have similar surveys from the United States that show that the ordinary American is really, really supportive of almost everything NASA does, except for going to Mars, which most Americans seem to think is just a dream. And until Artemis, also sort of going back to the moon, the really risky stuff involving humans. But so, yeah, what do you think, Nils?
Yeah, I think we should let Jan go.
I think he's a busy guy, and he has a lot to do. But I think if we should conclude this, it is that although I think to many of our listeners, perhaps, when they think of where should Europe be in 10 years, many people would say, well, if you had a European on the moon, that would be great. But what you're really saying is that if we have this transformation of the European Space Agency and the European space business, that's really the most important thing, this structural change to sort of to make us go forward into space, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Director General of the European Space Agency, Jan Werner, for coming here and talking to us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing the pioneering spirit and the fascination.
Especially
because space.
That's also what we're all about. We're fascinated by space, and so are all our listeners. Mm.
Thank you very much.
Skal vi ta en kjapp liten greie sånn på norsk her, Eirik?
Ja.
For en ting vi må si, det jo det at siden sist så har vi gjort en greie. Altså, vi hørte jo her Jan si at ESA ber om 8 euro per innbygger, et eller annet sånt nå. Vi har jo satt opp en VIPs-konto for å prøve å hjelpe oss litt på mølla her. Kan vi si det sånn at vi takker for alle bidrag som kommer til oss?
Vi veldig glad for det, for at det noe en gang sånn at det finnes ingen som støtter oss. Vi har faktisk hverken noen regjering eller noen overnasjonal organisasjon I ryggen, så vi avhengig av våre lytteres velvillighet og støtte.
Ikke sant, og da skal vi nå si tusen takk til Magnus, Andreas, Njål og Terje, som har søkt opp romkapsel på VIPs og donert noen kroner til oss, og det vi veldig takknemlige for.
Takk for det, og det også slik vi kan fortsette å produsere nye episoder, så dette kjempebra.
Og så har vi klart oss gjennom en hel episoden uten å nevne han vi pleier å nevne.
Ja, det har vi jo, men det passer egentlig ganske bra her da, å ikke nevne han.
Ja, jeg tror det er greit.
Ja.
Men da har vi landet igjen da, nå tar jeg den I Kazakhstan og han presidenten som vi ikke husker hva heter, og alt det der.
Ja.
Og så sier vi til vi høres igjen neste gang, nå har vi selvfølgelig toppet laget for en stund.
Vi har det altså. Det mulig at vi ikke kommer til å finne like celebre gjester neste gang, men det jeg tror skal gå bra likevel.
Denne podcasten produsert av Tid og Lyst.
Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Ikke det. Nei, men da holder vi det enkelt og gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken, superenkelt regnskap.